in the fall.
And Vienna, Austria?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if you meant like Vienna right down the road from here, like Vienna Elementary School. Is it Vienna fucking Austria?
Yeah, up actually going to Austria. So I was like, wow, another year not off.
Well, I remember back in when we spoke in January, I think it was, we were asking, you know, what your con appearances was. And Allison was like, none. We're not doing any.
That was December, right?
Was it December?
Yeah, because that's when we recorded the
I couldn't remember
Star
if it was
Wars
December
thing,
yeah. or January.
It was right after The Force Awakens.
Yeah, and I remember Allison was like, no, we're not doing any cons this year, and we were really bummed out.
All of us just kind of like deflated a little bit. We're like, oh.
Yeah, and then we were looking at your schedule just, you know, because we all follow you on Facebook, and it was like, appearing at MegaCon, I was like, son of a bitch lied to us.
it wasn't a lie in December.
No. Completely understandable. Like, I was like, well, he is launching a main title for Archie Comics.
Yeah.
That might have something to do with it.
Yeah, might have a little to do with it. But I'm glad that you're not taking a break. I mean...
Yeah, because fuck your well-being, right?
That's right. I don't dislike conventions as much as I just grown to dislike the whole traveling in an airplane experience. I just think it's tedious.
Yeah.
And
there's not much enjoyable about it.
Yeah. No, but I'm old enough to remember when it was like fun, you know, where it's just like you went to the airport, you just ran to your gate and, you know, just threw yourself on a plane. And now it's just and you know, I've been doing conventions since 1988. I'm baked. I'm done. I was saying to my wife, if I could just have 12 months where I do not have to go near an airplane, I think I could completely rejuvenate and
do the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had this discussion over Korea, so it's like, oh my God, you know.
Well, have you considered doing Skype appearances?
They
set up some sort of. You know, motion capture device on your arm, so you can sign books, and it's just a face, like a screen with you on it, and then every so often a old English sheepdog kind of pops his head into the picture.
Yeah, you know, I would if I wasn't. You know, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around Y2K. I, you know, like everybody says, oh, you should do a Periscope, you should do a Tinder, you should do a Tumblr, and I'm just kind of like, get off my lawn.
Adam Hughes bot 12.0.
Oh, I just, you know, you kids today with your Tetris, I can't
keep up.
I can't keep up, you know, and I'm trying to get there. I mean, at least something like doing, you know, drawing comic books and doing convention appearances, or at least something I know how to do. Right. So I can slowly get to the point where my VCR will stop flashing 12.
Dude, if you need help with that, I can definitely.
I can't walk you through that one. Yeah. I still haven't figured it out, and like I know how to use a computer, but I cannot
barely.
Still set the fucking clock.
You can barely use a computer.
No, he's right. I don't. I like they yell at me because I don't know how to internet, and they're like, "Dude, you run a podcast." I'm like, "No, you run it with me." So I pawn off the technological bullshit on you, and I just walk around on a con floor and talk too much, and that's my quote-unquote contribution. And it works out.
Alex is one iPhone away from being a Luddite. Like,
yeah,
if he didn't have an iPhone, he'd just be a Luddite.
That and a giant brow ridge and a club.
No, you've got that. You've got the brow ridge.
That's not bad.
And you carry a club at work fairly often.
That is true. Looks more like a wrench, but I'll call it a club. But the most important question I think today is, Adam, how is your Pokemon Go account going?
I don't have one.
I
did almost kill somebody last night with my car.
Oh, do tell.
Who was crossing. My wife and I were coming back from dinner with actually Dave Johnson, another a comic book artist, and it was dark, and this gentleman was crossing the street. I had the right of way, and I was making a left-hand turn. He was crossing the street wearing black slacks, a black apron like Starbucks, and a dark blue shirt, and he was just looking at his phone. And I had to swerve to avoid him. And if there had been a car coming in that lane, I would have been in an accident. Oh, and I was like going, God, I was just frazzled by it. My wife said, probably playing Pokemon Go. And, and I was like, well, yeah, I almost, you know, yeah. So I don't have one. You know, I've learned the hard way that, you know, writing and drawing a comic book completely annihilates your free time, because it took me over a month and a half to finish Uncharted 4, because I'd get like a half hour one night, and then 5 days later, maybe an hour that night. And I don't have time for exercise. I don't have time to be for sunshine. I can't play Pokemon Go.
Well, speaking of...
Welcome to Name Redacted Podcast.
Hey.
As always, I'm Alexander Fulmer.
I'm Chris Nielsen.
I'm Colin Norris. And with us today is the illustrious Adam Hughes. We've got him back on the podcast. Thanks for being here today, Adam.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Always a pleasure, every time.
And, I mean, we have been recording for the last...
5 minutes?
5 minutes.
we love our soft opens. But today, those of you who are longer listeners know that we've gotten Adam and actually his wife Allison on the podcast before, and also we've done a panel with them at, I believe it was NC Comic Con last year in November.
Yes.
About Star Wars. So we've actually done two things that were Star Wars with them. So we kind of reached out to Adam and saw if he wanted to get on and talk about some shit that was not Star Wars. And he said yes. Yeah, so
just so happens
that's where we're at this moment.
Yeah, and like, you know, like the last day of Star Wars Celebrations Europe. What a great day to stop talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, really.
It's like bags of Star Wars news piled up waiting for everybody to talk about.
I'm sure we'll get into a little of that once we get through
the pertinent information.
The milieu of other things we need to talk about. Like that word? Million.
Yeah, I do. I appreciate it.
It's an actually. SAT word.
It is.
Somebody's got word of the day toilet paper.
And a Far Side calendar.
Yeah, no shit. No, but Adam, you've got a book coming out on Wednesday. Let's talk about that. You are doing the new Betty and Veronica title.
That's
it. And it's a little bit different because I'm sure most people know you as a comic book artist. But this time you're doing double duty. You're illustrating and you're writing the script as well.
Yes.
Okay. And does this take place in the same timeline as Life with Archie? Or I'm trying to place like this new...
No, Life with Archie was sort of a alternate reality, them as grown-ups, all married and whatnot.
Right.
I'm not even entirely sure that this takes place in the Mark Wade, like Chip Zdarsky Archieverse.
Right.
Because no one at Archie has told me, you can't do that because in the other comic, you know, this is happening. And I go, oh, okay. You know, they're just being very like, you know, make a good comic. And I was like, okay. So I personally think it's very difficult to like these Superman titles and these Spider-Man titles and these Batman titles where one comes out every week because they're all interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
And
you've got an editor breathing down on your neck to make sure everything's on canon.
Yeah.
But you're also, yeah, you got to be on canon. You got to be on model, but you've also got to do a good job while coordinating with another writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I have a rough idea about like what's going on over in the regular Archie title, and I'm sort of not paying attention. So I it might be completely different. And if it is, just say it's Earth 2. It's the Earth 2 Riverdale.
I feel like, unbeknownst to you, you're starting the beginning of a new Archie
multiverse. Yeah.
Like yours is like probably going to be the first in a certain universe, and they're just not fucking telling you for some reason.
And in 5 years, there's going to be Crisis and Infinite whatever
Archie's
malt shops.
Crisis on Infinite malt shops.
Yes, yeah, and you know, like, I mean, I've been told that the because you know they just rebirthed DC Comics the whole thing, and people started coming to me saying, "Have you heard that?" DC's now saying that the whole new 52 universe was a result of your Dr. Manhattan Before Watchmen miniseries.
I forgot that was yours.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I forgot.
If I'm in the universe business now, one, I want a blood test, and two, I really need a raise because I'm just like going, wow, I was just hired for like, you know, drawing, you know, blue penises and bikini shots. And it's very possible that what I'm doing in Betty and Veronica might just end up being this little pocket Atomverse.
That'd be fantastic.
Oh, well,
my God, Atomverse. I don't have a fucking t-shirt.
I have a hard time describing myself as a writer because it is a true craft, and I've stumbled backwards into being a writer. I just consider myself an elegant typist, and my real skill in when it comes to writing is I think I'm very good with dialogue. I think everybody seems to find that the dialogue I write is very natural.
Yeah.
And that can spackle over a whole world of plot problems. So,
Kevin Smith wouldn't have a career if it weren't for dialogue. So, yeah. I mean, it obviously goes a long way.
It's a fat Jersey guy thing. So we're both. I've got Betty and Veronica number one coming out next week, and it's coming out for San Diego. You couldn't ask for a better launch.
I mean,
it's like the new Star Trek Beyond movie. They're coming out the Friday of San Diego Comic Con. Having your tentpole movie come out during the biggest, you know, multimedia fan event of the year is great, because that means you can use the convention for, you know, to use it to its best ability. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm a bad writer. I can promote the book. It's not too early. It's not too late. It's actually very timely.
Timely.
Yeah.
I got my fingers crossed that folks enjoy it, and In fact, we just got a box of comps.
Nice. I saw that on Facebook. I was like, "Oh, that's what we're talking about today."
That that Betty and Veronica 3,
the
two variant covers, yeah, are awesome. Like,
Thank you.
Probably going to pick up both of those as soon as I can. And what's the release schedule going to be? Is it going to be monthly? Is it going to be every other month?
I think it's I pushed for every 6 weeks, and I think Archie has gone for every 2 months, because I am doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a cover artist since the late 90s, and it's very weird because I'm a comic book artist who never seems to draw comic books. And people say, "Why do you do that, Adam?" And I go, "Well, people, it's because no one asks me to draw interiors."
I become the cover guy.
Yeah. I mean, I go where the work is. People call me up and say, "Hey, would you draw this cover?" And in the last 4 years or so, it's, "Would you do this variant cover?" It's like, okay. People assume that I'm much richer than I actually am. And they assume that I am a 800-pound gorilla that can go kick in doors and say, "Give me Spider-Man," you know? And these companies will do what I say, and I'm just happy to have work. So when Archie came to me and said last year and said, "Would you be into," not Archie, the guy with the waffles on the side of his head. whenever I say Archie, it's Archie Comics in all caps. Right. When Archie Comics came to me last year and said, "Would you be interested in being involved in the Betty and Veronica reboot?" And I said, "Doing what?" And they said, "Well, what would you like to do?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to write and draw it." And I had to go reach over and put their mouths, to close their mouths.
I was about to say, you just laid it on the table, didn't you? Just
I did.
Look at
it. they were very surprised by it, but they were enthused by the idea of it. And we've made it work. And I've gotten a taste for, now that I'm working on my own stuff. Ostensibly, you know, I'm drawing what I'm writing and writing what I'm drawing. I've got a real taste for it now, and I want to keep doing it.
Could we possibly see a creator-owned book coming from you in the future?
It's possible. I've got an idea for something that I'd like to do.
Awesome.
But it all depends on, you know, it all depends on how well this goes, because the unfortunately the things that make you money which allows you to go off and do creator owned stuff, yeah, is either super duper fame, mm-hmm, or a pile of money in the bank. Yeah. You know, the reason I can work for Archie or DC or Marvel is they pay you the minute you draw the work or write the work. With a creator owned book, I mean, you either have to have a deal with somebody like, say, Dark Horse, you know, who pays you your regular rate in advance of royalties, or, you know, you work for Image where you get a 50-50 split once the money comes in. So it all depends on how well this does, but I'd like to. I mean, I can't commit to anything, and it could never happen because I've tried once before. But it's definitely something on my mind. I do like being the architect of my own creative endeavors.
Yeah. I mean, like, honestly, if you decided you wanted to do like an online release webcomic, like I'd pay for that.
I'd
absolutely pay for that. Like,
set up a subscription service through Patreon.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure, because we've talked about that on the podcast with a lot of people before, with like panels and stuff, talking about web to print and all that stuff. But I'm telling you, man, like, people would buy an Adam Hughes webcomic. They absolutely would.
Well, you know, that's if it ever happens, it would be down the road, because I'm, you know, people ask me, how long are you going to stay on Betty and Veronica? And I tell them until I get fired. Right. You know, it's I'm handing in story ideas all the time, trying to just run them up the flagpole and see what they like.
Yeah. So the new Archie reboots are slightly more mature than the Digest, right? That's how they're doing it, or at least more. What's the word?
More adult, like more adult centric. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say
more developed, not just like comic strip kind of stuff.
Yeah, because I mean, nobody's ever been able to call what I do anything other than immature. Yeah. So, oh, that's great. I should have like a for immature audiences warning on the.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I keep testing the waters of Archie editorial, going, could I have a character say this, or could there be this sort of innuendo happening? And they're giving today's, you know, younger readers a lot of credit. They're going, yeah, that's cool. That one won't go over their heads, and that one won't cause too much problem when they go ask mom or dad, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So, mommy, what's a roofie? You know.
I had a bad joke. I can't.
Don't.
But it's funny because only in certain circumstances am I actually sitting there going, "Oh, I should dial back. Right. This is going to be an all ages comic."
Yeah.
And to be honest, you know, there are people out there who've criticized. It's like, you know, hey, having Adam Hughes work on Betty and Veronica is like sort of pandering to the male gaze and you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And my wife and I, we encourage people, please take a look at the history of Archie.
Yeah.
And it's
those characters are two very, I mean, they're stereotypes. It's the blonde girl and the brunette,
and they've always
stereotypical way possible.
They're always canonically extremely attractive and the ultimate ideal of femininity in their given stereotypes.
Yeah. And
in my opinion.
And, you know, there's obviously, you know, human hormones, you know, sort of poured into the printing ink, because the stories are all just about how can you get these girls? How can Archie, you know.
Or a little ginger douchebag pulls down all these ridiculously attractive women.
And, you know, one of the things we're doing on Betty and Veronica is it has nothing to do with their relationship with Archie. It has nothing to do with Archie's that's the Archie comic. Archie is, you know, he's got this lifelong friend named Betty Cooper, who's a tomboy, and then this new girl moves into town and she's this rich, upscale, fascinating person. And that's what Mark Waid's got going on over in his book. And in mine, Archie and Jughead and Reggie and Moose and all those characters are all supporting characters. And I don't have even a mention of relationship stuff in the first issue.
That's great. I mean, that's really interesting, because I've always wanted to know more about Betty and Veronica when they're not people trying to have a go.
I want to know about them as people, not as the objects of Archie's possible affections.
Because that
doesn't round them out. All that does is it puts them into a box as a female target for the leading male to like be like, oh, which one of these girls am I most into? And doesn't give them room to expand as characters.
But it's like the Knights of the Round Table. I mean, what can you tell me about Sir Percival's character apart from the fact that he's looking for the Holy Grail? You know, it's like they're defined by their quest.
Yeah.
And the reason to have a spinoff book, ideally, is to explore different areas. So, this is, even though Archie's in the book and I, God help me, Jughead is the funniest character. He's the Joey of the Riverdale set, because you can always turn to Jughead for a gag to rescue like a page that you think is just like all exposition, or this page needs to like be funnier. It's just turn to Jughead, and he's just the Rosetta Stone of comedy, just waiting to be translated.
Absolutely.
But it's all, to my mind, about the Betty and Veronica dynamic, not even just about who they are as individuals. It's like, who are they as pertain to each other?
Yeah.
And
a frenemy relationship.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why when I pitched my idea, because Archie didn't have a set plan. They just said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, 2016. And this was before 2016 turned out to be
the year it has been.
The sort of unpleasant year that it has been. When I pitched this to them last year, I said, well, hey, look, we've got Batman versus Superman. We've got Captain America, Civil War. We've got a presidential election coming up. 2016 is the year of versus. So I said, let's do Betty versus Veronica. So that's what we're doing. You're gonna find out all about them because they're rolling their sleeves up and they're going toe to toe with each other.
That's cool. That's cool. Has it been weird? Have you been trying to like stay true in some respects to the comic strip format of the digest, or like have you had like has it been weird trying to adapt that two-dimensional nature of the original digest into a more fledged out character?
No. The only character that I've had trouble with was Jughead, because I'm going, I've got to give him the pointy nose and the fact that his eyes never appear to be open, but is he stoned all the time? I can't tell,
Yeah.
He always is eating. So fortunately I was freed up by what Mark Waid and Fiona Staples started over at Archie, with what Francesco Francavilla started out doing with Afterlife with Archie, which is it's okay to go off the sort of Dan DiCarlo model.
Yeah.
And so I'm drawing Betty and Veronica in a slightly looser, lighter style than, say, Dr. Manhattan. It's more like a sort of a slightly more, considered version of my convention sketches. Because I think I want people to never take it seriously.
Just from the covers I've seen, I like how loose it is. It's not as like tight and meticulous. It does have that kind of sketchiness to it.
And it's the only way I can get it done, because if I sit down and paint over every black and white tile in Pop's Chocolate Shop, one, I'll go nuts, and two, it'll never come out.
Right.
Just doing that ultra super detailed, like Brian Stelfreeze style, ridiculous detail. Because I actually thought about that too, because I was talking to one of my friends about the fact that we were going to have you on, and he was asking me a little bit about you, and he'd heard of you and not seen much of your stuff, and I showed him like some of your stuff that pops up on Google when you do image searches.
My go-to is always the Catwoman.
Yeah, it's the first thing that pops up is the Adam Hughes Catwoman, and I'm showing him, and he goes, "Dude, that guy's got like an absurd amount of detail in his work." And I was like, "Yeah," and he's doing a whole book soon where he's writing and drawing, and he goes, "How does he get it done?" And I was like, "He probably doesn't fucking put that much detail into it." That's what I have to assume, unless he wants it to come out every 6 months, but. Yeah, like it's
we're even looking I'm showing them on my phone the preview page from number one that Allison put up on Facebook. And even to say that this is a looser style than some of your covers is doing a grave injustice to the line work, because it is still incredibly clean and crisp. I mean, especially. I mean, are you inking it as well, or are you just doing pencils?
Yeah, I'm doing. I'm penciling and inking.
Jesus, God in heaven.
Who's doing your colors?
Jose Villarubia is doing the colors.
Okay,
cool.
And he's a dear friend, and we've actually gone to many museums. He's an art teacher in Baltimore when he's not coloring comics, and he takes us to museums, and we just like have these fantastic art illustration field trips with him. And
That's dope.
If you can ever go to a museum with Jose, he's the best. And when the time came to pick a color artist for the book, Allison, we were kind of going, this person, that person, they might not be free. They just got signed for this. And Allison suggested Jose, and I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And my only regret is I was so busy trying to get everything taken care of, it did not occur to me that Jose's name should be on the cover. Oh, so yeah. So it just says Adam Hughes, Betty, and Veronica on the cover. And starting with issue two, I'm going to make sure that he gets a cover credit.
That's good. Is it having like writing and drawing your own comic, do you feel like it kind of changes the way that you approach the story structure a little bit? Like, or like when you script it out, or you just kind of maybe not, do you, would you just like script it different or something? Because you kind of have the visuals in your head of what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I am thinking visually when I'm working on it, although I will admit that I've learned, you know, like after we finished the first issue, I realized that I overwrote it.
Yeah.
That I put way too much stuff in. I would sit there and I'd have like four or five balloons per panel.
Yeah.
Per panel. And then I'd go to bed and I'd be reading a Hellboy and I'd be going, there's only four or five balloons on this on a page.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, I overwrote this. So it's like I am learning. The one nice thing, though, about drawing something that you've written is the script is merely an earlier draft, because I've made so many changes while I'm drawing.
Oh, that's
and cool. And I don't have to check with an editor or the writer to go, hey, look, this would work better if I switched the progression of this or whatever. And I've made actual improvements where, like, you know, there's enough time that goes place that inspires between the writing of it and then the drawing of it.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you get that break where you can go back and look at it with fresh eyes and you can.
So it's just like writing another draft.
Yeah,
exactly. So definitely improved it when when I sat down and drew it. And the nice thing about it is it's being lettered by a gentleman named Jack Morelli, who is, he's been in lettering comics for 30 years, and he's part of the storytelling team. He's not just the person that puts the balloons over their heads. He has actually enhanced some of the jokes by placing the punchline balloon far enough away from the setup balloon, so that the reader actually has
comedic timing.
There's a 1 second break while your eye glances from the left of Veronica to the right of Veronica to get the punchline.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God, this guy's. So he's actually he's making it work, making it even not just easier to read, but he's making it funnier.
That's awesome.
That's gotta be. I mean, that's a skill that's gotta take years to develop and understand, and because that's so subtle, that ability to put like just moving a balloon
and not
like,
intuitive.
Yeah, like just move it an inch, and that 1 inch will actually put in the timing you need to make the joke hit better or whatever it needs to be. That's incredible. That's really that's something to be admired for sure.
I'm really lucky because. You know, I can be a bit of a control freak, and Jose and Jack are wonderful partners. I'm so excited that they're part of this, and I hope they stick around as long as I'm around. Because after we got the first issue done, I was like, oh, now we're becoming a jazz band. You know, we're actually sort of okay. I can anticipate what he's going to do. I can understand what he wants, and I was thinking about that when I was looking at the first issue on I think we had it Friday night. Yeah, we had Friday night because we had a little. An accidental, unintended release party at my house. We're like, let's go out for steak. And then we went home to call everybody over. And I was like, you know, when you call everybody over for the release of your new album, you all sit around and drink and dance and listen to the music. When you invite friends over for a release party for your comic, everybody quietly sits and reads. And you're just sitting there, and somebody will chortle.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, just a bunch of nerds sitting around drinking wine and chuckling to themselves softly.
That's good.
I have been to louder Magic the Gathering tournaments. And, like, somebody would sit there and chuckle or something, and we'd say, we'd like, what are you laughing at? What are you laughing at? We're, like, doing a poll.
Yeah, to show, I'd be like, did it hit? Did it work?
Did it work? Yeah. You know, it's like, I keep thinking of those, like, you know, stories about Steven Spielberg, you know, test screening Jaws and sitting in the front row, looking around at back at everybody, measuring the audience response to see if they had nailed the fright or the gag or whatever it was. And I'm going, I totally understand that now.
Yeah.
But while I was looking at the comic, I was already seeing how, you know, the three of us were working together, and now I'm actually thinking about ways now that I can trust, you know, these guys.
Yeah.
And I can sit there and go, well, I can now depend on them. I can sit there and say, I'm going to do a lettering specific gag in an upcoming issue, and I know Jack can pull it off. I don't have to worry about sort of micromanaging it.
Right. And especially like by not trying to micromanage it, it gives him room to be creative with it.
And be comfortable, yes. And that's what it's about, man. Being comfortable with people you work with.
When you see the issue next week, he did some of the things in there that are like really kind of funny or really work really well. I had nothing to do with. He actually came up with them, and I was like, going, "Well, God bless you, man."
Yeah, that's awesome. So, does it like obviously you've worked with very iconic characters before, but it sounds like you have a lot more control over these characters. Is that like, do you feel the pressure of that? Like, is it like a weird sensation to be like, oh, I'm in control of these characters that like everybody knows?
No. Fortunately, I've been accused of being self-involved. So, I don't really pay attention. I remember when I started working on Wonder Woman and I really got nervous.
Yeah,
because I was like, oh my goodness, this is a character that's as old as my mother, you know, and I felt this sort of weight of stewardship, you know, like I'm currently in charge of the covers for an important character.
Yeah,
and you know, that was 1997, and now I'm just kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I'm not the beginning of Betty and Veronica, and I won't be the end,
right.
You know. I will just be a chapter in a very long, colorful story. And whoever comes after me will do their own thing. And, you know, hopefully whether I have, you know, Archie lets me do 3 issues or they let me do 30 issues, you know, I can sit back and go, that was me. It's not the Alpha. It's not the Omega. It's just a chapter.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of harkens to something that we talked about with, you and Allison, and as well as Tommy Lee Edwards and Tony Harris, when we were with you guys on the Star Wars panel, when we asked you kind of what it felt like to like follow in the footsteps of all those Star Wars people, and all of you just kind of gave the same answer. It's not really like following in footsteps per se. It's just like there's so many thousands of people that have done like Star Wars art for like toy boxes and for, you know, video games and all this other shit. Like, we're just nameless, faceless people in a group of thousands of people that's worked on this thing that is special. And I think that that's a kind of a cool idea, is just to be like, fuck it. Like, I'm not the beginning. I'm not the end. I'm a contributor to something that a lot of people love, and I'm happy with that. And I think that's honestly, that's a great way to look at it. I think that's kind of a very humble way to look at it too. Just be like, I'm doing my job.
Fuck exactly. It. You know, I mean, I'd hate to be the second person.
Yeah.
You know, to be the second person that like to draw Flash Gordon after Alex Raymond, to be the second person to draw, you know, Hellboy after Mike Mignola, you know, once you get past that, once you sort of like break the seal on that, you know, sort of Pandora's box, then it's just like, yeah, you know, I used to fret. I remember one of my first big gigs was Justice League America back in like 1989, and I used to fret over drawing Batman. And I was like,
imagine, yeah,
yeah.
I would, because he's fucking Batman.
But I would sit there and chew a pencil to pieces, nervously wondering how long his ears should be. And, you know, you've got the, you know, you got the Frank Miller cold nipple ears, you know, that are just like little, like, it's almost like he's having a bad hair day.
And then you've got Tim Sale.
You got Tim Sale and Bernie Wrightson, who Batman actually can't go through doors because he's like a tower that Sauron lives in. You know, he's just got these spires coming off the top of his head, and anything in between those two extremes is legit. And nowadays, when I draw Batman, I don't even draw him the same length at the same time, like a short one and a long one at the same time. Who cares? You know. So yeah, it's like, you know, here's the thing though, is like when you're working on something that's, you know, been around forever, you know, you're not the only version of it. Yeah. And if you get wrapped up in like, but I want to be the best, you know, I want to be the best one of this, that's just going to sort of like cripple you, you know. And the one thing that you get after working in any creative field for a very long time is you realize you can't please all the people all the time. No. And what that means is ultimately there are some people who are going to love what you do, there are some people who are going to be meh about what you do, and there are some people who are going to hate it. So you just have to sort of embrace the fact that, well, somebody out there is going to like what I do. Yeah. And those are the people that I'm working for.
That's a good mindset to hold on to, especially when you do this publicly exposed things. You know what I mean? Like,
just remember that it's not just you.
Yeah.
Like trying to please everybody, because I mean, you're right. It's like that with everything. Like, you can't please everybody all the fucking time. So just please who you can and be happy with the result, and you know, continue on about your life.
Exactly. And in today's climate, you know, where everything is scrutinized,
everything is a possible trigger. Everything,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you can't try to play both sides of the fence. I mean, you know, I know that there are people waiting for My Betty and Veronica with, you know, a bottle of lanolin and tissue papers, and there are people sharpening knives waiting for me to make the first transgression. They're just gonna
I bet there are people who are just ready to hate read it.
Yeah.
And it's like you sit there and go, you know, it is what it is. And I'm just doing what I honestly think is entertaining. And I can't try to play to the audience, because especially because nowadays audience can be very volatile. What's that?
Yeah.
And it's very diverse too.
It's very diverse. So you can't speak to everyone, but also you can't. And also I don't think it's right to play it safe. I don't think it's, I think, you know, when you end up with mediocre material, when you sit there and go, well, I don't want to do something that everyone will respond strongly to, like they're going to love it or they're going to hate it.
Right.
I want to do something that offends the least amount of people, and that's when you end up with like really mediocre.
Yeah,
you know,
because you're not trying to say anything at that point,
and it becomes homogenized.
Yeah, you're not saying anything. You're mumbling. You're quietly mumbling, and hoping nobody is offended by what they happen to catch. And it's like, you know what, I'll talk with the Archie guys and we'll go like, let's just piss people off, let's not worry about it, and just let's just swing for the fence on this one. And
they're obviously not scared because I turned Jughead into a zombie.
Exactly.
So at this point they've killed off their main, you know, they did the death of Archie, for God's sake. I mean, so they're really ready to take some risks. And I mean, is that something when you were approached by them with as avant-garde as they have been and as forward-thinking as they have been with their properties, is that part of the reason you decided to work with them?
When I first, you're exactly right. When I first started talking to Archie about doing work, and it started with like a variant cover and then another variant cover, and then we started talking about doing this book. When we started, I was just going, you really want me? I mean, and they're like, no, we're just, you know, just swing for the fence, draw what you want. And the only thing is because the climate has gotten more, you know, dangerous and more sensitive, you know, we are asking ourselves, we're not just willy-nilly going, woo, you know, pillow fight, you know, we're, will sit there and go, you know, should we, you know, and I hate working that way. I hate second guessing a good idea because you're worried that it might set somebody off. And is, does that, how many followers does that person have on Twitter? You know, and it's like,
is this the one?
Yeah. It's like, you're going, is this really the best environment, the best atmosphere for being, you know, at your most creative? So we did start off with the, let's go break a few windows. And, you know, as things have progressed while we're working on it, we do sit back and think, well, let's maybe rethink that joke, or let's, I will say that I haven't been asked to redraw anything yet.
That's good.
Nobody has said to me, hey, you know, that's a little too sexy, or hey, that's this or that. Nobody has asked me to dial anything but down, because my goal isn't to just – I'm not Howard Stern. I don't want to just shock people for the sake of shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to entertain people.
I just want people to laugh. That's really, I mean, if they, you know, when they're done reading Betty and Veronica, like turn to their best friend and go, I love you too. Swell, but I don't care. all I want is for people to get done the issue and have laughed six times. And because I'm just treating this as a situation comedy.
Yeah, that's
great. I have no great agenda to, you know, mansplain the this or that or the other thing. It's just like, I just want fun. I want Archie to be funny.
Yeah.
Or, you know, meaning the Archie comics universe.
Yeah. I think that's a fantastic way to look at it. Now we were just talking about how you've worked on JLA, you've worked on Wonder Woman, you've done, you know, Dr. Manhattan, now Betty and Veronica, all the things you've done in the Star Wars universe. Is there, what's left on your bucket list in terms of properties you want to work on?
It's really funny. Yeah. I've been very fortunate. I'm actually, next year I'll have been working in comics for 30 years.
That's incredible. Wow.
And I really have worked.
I'll be 30 this year. So if that gives you, just go ahead and feel old for a second. Awesome.
Fantastic. I still would love to write and draw a World War II Captain America comic. I would love to. Ooh. If I finish Betty and Veronica and you know, knock on wood, it turns me into somebody that companies want to write and draw whole comics for, and Marvel says, name it, I'm going to go, we're doing, you know, Captain America, you know, punching Nazis so hard their skulls come out of their head.
That'd be so great. Oh, man.
But it's tough. It's tough because I'll sit there and I'll go, well, you know, what haven't I done?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've worked on Star Wars and Star Trek, two of my favorite things. I've drawn almost all of my favorite superheroes professionally. And you can't argue with a career like that. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm enjoying Betty and Veronica so much, because I never thought I would be here.
Yeah,
I mean, this is, it's
very out of left field, even like 3 or 4 years ago.
You know, people are asking me, why, Adam, why? And I go, you know what, I'm tired of waiting for the apocalypse, so I thought I would jumpstart it by being, you know, the harbinger of doom and going, look, Adam Hughes is working on your favorite childhood, you know, comic book heroines. So there you go. It's funny. I did you mentioned the covers to number 3.
Mm-hmm.
For people, you know, who are listening, please Google Betty and Veronica number 3 covers.
All the covers. They're
gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I did that without even telling Archie. I figured if they can do 29 variants or 38 variants for the first issue, then I could hand in 2 covers for issue 3 and say, "Hey, could you please split them evenly amongst the print run. Like 50% of issue 3 will have the Betty cover, 50% will have the Veronica cover." And one thing that was interesting is I'm you know, really trying to own the whole hashtag Team Betty, hashtag Team Veronica
thing. I want a Team Veronica shirt.
Yeah.
So badly.
Check us out at San Diego. You might be happy.
If I could get to San Diego, I would.
Well, they'll probably... If it does happen, they'll be available online.
Okay, cool.
But I handed those in. I just did those shirts. I just did them in those shirts as sort of a, you know, like a, without asking if I could have a split run. And they were like, yeah, sure. And I was like, God bless you guys. But when I was showing them on Twitter last week, somebody, and I was asking people, are you hashtag Team Betty or are you hashtag Team Veronica? Somebody said, and it didn't occur to me, hey man, that's a Twitter poll. And I did one. I did a Twitter poll.
Yeah.
And it came up 58% Team Betty.
Oh.
52-48. I think was this switch. Let me check my phone. It was neck and neck. It
with the
really
margin of error. That's a dead heat.
Yeah.
So it is interesting because, you know, I've been very, people will always ask me when this was announced at San Diego Comic-Con last year, they said, are you Team Betty or are you Team Veronica? And I was like, oh, I'm Team Betty. And all the Veronica fans were like, boo, you know, eat a bag of penises. and it's like, there, I think a lot of fans are worried that I'm going to I'm just going to make Betty the star of the book and Veronica is just going to be a secondary character. Yeah.
Especially because it's very easy to demonize Veronica.
Yeah.
It is.
She's a rich bitch girl that we all knew, you know, like.
I mean, she gets demonized hardcore in parts of Afterlife.
Yeah.
Like, she gets really,
literally
really
demonized.
Shitty. Like, no, literally, that doesn't happen.
Not
like,
yet.
That's not yet, like. Those of you who know how much I love that fucking book.
Anyway, Adam, what were you saying?
No, it's going to be funny to see people's reactions because I find that Betty, for this first story we're doing, which is three issues, you know, Betty versus Veronica is the first three issues. Betty really is the airlock procedure. She's the tour guide. And, you know, Veronica is, you know, a bit of an inscrutable sort of like X factor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had to do a very, very careful balancing act because I didn't want it to come across like I was giving Veronica less time.
Yeah.
And I've actually surprised myself by how much I've enjoyed doing Veronica.
Yeah. So are you still Team Betty after having worked on the comic?
Oh yeah. Okay. I mean, I, you know, would hang out with Veronica, but I would take Betty home to meet my mother, you know, and, but I understand Veronica's appeal and, you know, I don't want to, I remember when I was a kid and I was reading the John Byrne, Chris Claremont X-Men comics. And when I remember John Byrne saying in an interview that his favorite character was Wolverine. And then all of a sudden I'm reading it. I'm going, well, of course. I mean, he's partly responsible for turning Wolverine into sort of the popular character that he is. Cause obviously he was favoring Wolverine. Yeah. And, I don't want that to happen in this, you know, it's like, you know, I'm getting paid to do Betty and Veronica. So it's gotta be, you know, equal time, both of them. And, you know, I've got some stories lined up that hopefully Archie will keep me around for, you know, after the Versus arc that really do prominently feature Veronica.
It being 2016, why do we have to pick?
Come on, back.
I mean,
best
I just
joke of the day.
Just my opinion is por qué no los dos.
Oh, that's a good joke, but it hurts just a little bit. Oh, there's a dog in my lap. There's a pup. Anyway, go ahead, Adam. After getting railroaded by Colin.
Oh no, that's my that's my mission statement right there.
So good. I'm curious, like, are you, and I know this might be like a little bit jumping the shark, but are you at all ever interested in putting like new characters that are kind of frontline characters in Betty and Veronica to try to see if they stick?
No, I sometimes I think that happens, you know,
accidentally.
Accidentally, or, you know, There's a term for it. Like, you know, when people used to write Star Trek novels for, you know, paperback novels, and they would always insert some new crew member, ensign, whatever, that was just like a surrogate for them. And they were, you know, fan fictioning themselves into, you know, the Starship Enterprise. And I always find that when people start adding characters, it's because they've maybe grown bored mm-hmm. with, you know, the main characters. And at this point, there's no sign of me getting bored with Betty and Veronica. I could literally just do two of them in a rowboat for five issues, and make it entertaining, I think.
Also, I feel like when you I feel like if you were to do that, like you were just referencing, you know, characters like that, like getting shoehorned in, it can kind of come across a little Mary Sue-ish.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the author is trying to insert himself or themself into you know, the story, because it's a fantasy they've always wanted to live out. And I feel like that kind of it places an unnecessary point of view into an already established universe.
Yeah, I don't like it when I find out the politics of my favorite creators, because then all of a sudden their politics become apparent in everything they do. Like, I'll sit there and go, oh, Captain America just did that. He punched the Red Skull with his left hand because he's a, you know, soft-stooled liberal scum. And I've known that about now that I know that, because the writer is, all the way on the left, you know. And it's just like, I don't want to know. And you shouldn't be. I think that if it's crafted well, you shouldn't be able to know.
No, because it should be asking you questions that you're answering for yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, that was one of the main sort of problems I had with the Watchmen film.
Mm-hmm.
Was that they pulled off visually everything that happened, well, mostly everything that happened in the comic, but they kind of missed the point of the story. And the story was asking the reader, if the world was going to end tomorrow and you could save the world, but it would cost the lives of all of New York City, would you make that call?
Yeah.
And in the comic, you know, that yes or no answer is exemplified by Rorschach versus Night Owl. You know, Night Owl says, yes, compromise, you know, we've got to do it, we're stuck, we have to do it. And Rorschach says, no compromise, even in the face of Armageddon. And the story ends with Rorschach's journal at that newspaper office, and the copy boy picks it out of the mail, and the managing editor or whatever says, I leave it entirely up to you. And I thought that has always been the point of Watchmen, is to ask you, what would you do? If you could, would you save 7 billion people at the cost of 8 million? You know? And the film went and picked a side. And sort of shoveled it at you. And I went, now I know what, you know, the writer and the director think when they finish reading the comic book. I know what their decision is. And I hope that I don't ever do that. I love the idea of putting, you know, like when you get done Betty and Veronica number 3, and we've resolved, you know, the whole Betty versus Veronica thing, and Veronica's dead, and we get to the, I didn't
spoilers.
Say that.
Spoilers!
No.
We just got what we like to call a sclusy.
No, but like, you know, when the dust settles, I want people to sit there and go, I can actually see, you know, I could see Veronica's point of view. You know, like I understand why she did that, you know, and, you know, don't want to, you know, enforce my view of the world on anybody. It's one of the reasons why I don't talk politics on social media, is like, it's like, well, you know, nobody ever convinces anybody else of anything. So you're just like, it's like arguing at the wind.
Yeah. It's arguing in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you're
so
either
it's
agreed with one wholeheartedly or you're disagreed with wholeheartedly, and there's no room for logical, positive discourse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only once in my life have I ever went head to head with somebody over an issue, and they changed their mind after I got done talking.
Yeah.
And it was after Two Towers came out, and I was having Thanksgiving at a friend's house, and their brother came in, and you know, the previous Thanksgiving, or the previous Christmas rather, not Thanksgiving, previous Christmas, we'd all talked about Fellowship of the Ring. So I was like, oh, we're gonna all talk about Two Towers. And he came in and said, let's talk about how much we fucking hated the Two Towers. And I said, I loved it. What are you talking about? And he started to tell me about, like, oh, they got Faramir wrong. They did this. They did blah, blah, blah. Frodo. What was that bit with Frodo and the handing the ring to the ring wraith on the Fell Beast? And I walked them through it. I actually said, well, here's why they did what they did. And when I got done, to his credit, I got to say, and I'm not always right. I like it when people point stuff out to me that I'm getting wrong. But he said, huh, I'm going to go buy another ticket and check it out again. And I was like, I looked at him. It was like blowing in a baby's face. I just blinked and stared at him because I was like, going, I was waiting for the argument. I was waiting for him to start like, no, you were wrong, and here's why. And he was like, he took what I said and said, oh, that actually kind of makes sense. And I was like, there's hope for mankind.
Yeah. Well, going back to your original point, it
never.
What?
Never. Well, no. There's tangents are always one way streets.
I think it's important that. It's up to art to ask the question. It's not its obligation to answer it. And I think that goes with any visual medium or written medium. And I really get irritated with people who they watch a movie and it doesn't end with a nice tight ending, and people get so upset. And I'm like, it's up to you. What do you think happened? And then that happened. Create your own headcanon. I don't understand the desire for everybody to have everything spelled out for them.
Right.
It's up to art to ask the question and generate discussion and discourse. If it just handed us the answer on the silver platter, then what's the point?
I agree.
Except for The Sopranos, that ending was bullshit.
Fuck you. That was amazing. So. I love it.
So on the topic of blockbuster movies and revisiting them.
Yeah, let's talk about Star Wars.
7 months has gone by, Adam. How do you feel about Star Wars now?
Oh, golly. you've can open worms everywhere. I just did a Star Wars print for Sideshow Collectibles last week. And it vexed me because it was just one of those pieces that wouldn't, you know, it just wouldn't hunt, as they say.
Yeah.
And that dog go hunt. And I was just so angry with it that I was like, God, screw Star Wars. You know, God. Fuck R2-D2. You know, now is a great time because I'm just going to, like, spit bile. It's funny because, like, because this print that I did is, it features Rey.
Yeah.
And so I was watching a lot of Star Wars films while I was working, you know, and I put Force Awakens in quite a bit. And I really, the more I watch it, the more I love everything that's new. Mm-hmm. And the more my finger goes to the fast forward button whenever it's like a 3D IMAX sort of, you know, remake of something from 1977.
Yeah.
And I promised myself, I said, man, just keep your opinions to yourself. Like dissing on Star Wars is the stupidest, like, suicidal thing you could do in life these days.
Yeah.
And it's just every time I get to this Starkiller base, I'm just like
totally uninterested.
Why it's like, and the more I watch it, I get a little more annoyed that they played it so safe, because it's one thing to sit there and say, oh, they should have done this, or oh man, and they should have had this character. You know,
you have to judge it by what it is and not what it's not.
Yeah.
Right. Except when the fucking title crawl gives you the plot of a better film. Yeah. And they don't. They open that. There's no mention of the Starkiller base. There's no mention of a third Death Star. In fact, when they're doing the hologram of, like, how do we, hey kids, let's get together a I got a barn, I got a canteen, let's blow up a Starkiller base. The little rascals, war room session they have at the end. they didn't even mention that there was a second Death Star. They're like, this is how big Starkiller Base is. And it's like, well, which Death Star are you comparing it to? Because the second Death Star was bigger than the first one. The
second Death Star was like, forgive me if my scale's off, but it was somewhere around 3 times the size of Death Star 1.
Yeah. I've got a book that I could go open up, and it's got the size comparison, and it's official. And apparently, they've changed it because, you know, Star Wars canon is made out of butter, and all you have to do is turn up the heat and just melt it. And you know, I just saw that they're bringing back Grand Admiral Thrawn, which I grew.
We all just looked at that right before you fucking called us, and we were all just like, yes, like it was so great.
Fucking hate General or Admiral Thrawn.
What?
I do.
Okay.
As a character, or do you just like hate him as a like concept?
I hate him as a concept. Okay. But we'll get to that later. but it's like, you know, Force Awakens starts off with this title crawl that says Luke Skywalker is missing, and everybody, good and bad, is looking for him. And I went, stop drilling, you've hit oil. That's a great idea for a Star Wars story.
I think if it were like a chase movie where, you know, like sort of a James Cameron-esque chase film set in the Star Wars universe, I would watch the dog shit out of that.
Yeah.
Or it's like it's a mad world where everybody's hunting for the same MacGuffin, you know, and then all of a sudden in the third act, out of nowhere, there's a new Death Star that is blown up exactly like all the others, and all you've done is shown to me that the First Order is not very smart because they're using an idea that hasn't worked twice before.
Says it in the movie. There's always a way. There's got to be a way to blow it up. There always is.
Yeah.
When your characters actually draw attention to the plot holes, you've got a problem. And I was trying to explain it to somebody, and I felt bad because sometimes I will be so overwhelming in my arguing, it's great for podcasts. It's not great for brunch.
I disagree.
I gave him an analogy. I said, okay, let's pretend The Force Awakens is a new Indiana Jones movie. And I said, Indiana Jones has to go on a quest for some exciting new artifact. I said, let's call it the Staff of Moses. Okay. And you've got this great adventure and it's going along. You've got new characters and it's exciting and it's different. And all of a sudden, near the end of the second act, you find out the Nazis are looking for another Ark of the Covenant. And all of a sudden, you spend the entire third act of your movie reliving Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then after the Ark 2.0 is opened and it kills all the Nazis and everything's done, Marcus Brody, who's been sleeping in a corner for the whole film, wakes up and goes, oh, Indy, the Staff of Moses, I know where it is. And Indy finds it 5 minutes later.
That's okay. That's the most convincing argument yet.
I actually have a weird kind of counter to that, which is my girlfriend had never seen Star Wars before, and the first thing I showed her was Force Awakens, and seeing her reaction to the movie after never seeing any of the other Star Wars was really interesting, because like we talked about last time, like some of the reason that we feel they did that was to give the new generation of kids their own Death Star.
And I have a counter to that.
Oh, okay.
Their generation's Death Star should be the Death Star.
Right. My point is, we were talking earlier about, you know, whenever you do anything sort of like mediocre by committee to make all people happy, you end up with something very blah.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do that, okay, one, do it better than a 38-year-old film. And they didn't, because the first Star Wars has a better sense of menace, a better sense of impending doom. There's more of a countdown clock. More feels at stake at the end of Star Wars.
Characterization.
But yeah. And because also they're not intercutting between a lightsaber battle and patricide, you know, down on the planet and all that kind of stuff. But don't put a number 7 on it, because your girlfriend or kids today don't care that there were 6 before it. Okay, and so yes, it's new for them. Don't put a number 7 on it, telling 49-year-old Adam Hughes, you need to. This is the 7th chapter in this book you've been reading for 40 years. Yeah. Because it's like, do one thing or the other. Reboot Star Wars and do it all over again, which they're going to do anyway someday. But what they did was, oh, we're going to make it new and fresh for, you know, today's kids or your girlfriend or whatever. But we're going to rehire Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and, you know, warm up R2 and 3PO for all you people from 40 years ago. Yeah. So they're trying to be all things to all people. And they consequently have ended up with a movie that I only really enjoy about 55% of. Mm-hmm. And it's great that kids love it. Little girls dressed as BB-8 or little girls dressed as Rey hugging R2 units. I'm going, that's wonderful.
I have a BB-8 tattoo now. So, I mean.
Hey, you know, and it's like I actually loved the crap out of BB-8 and I thought I was going to get diabetes watching him.
he is super sweet.
I find that you know, the more I watch it, the more I like Finn. I liked Finn to begin with, and Finn should have been the way they blew up this. Like, I think I said this in the podcast when we talked. If you're going to do the Death Star for the third time, do something different with it.
Yeah.
Do it. But they, you know, I was talking about. Did I say this in the previous one, or did I not?
Something along the lines of, if you're going to do it, don't do it the exact same way you did it before.
Okay. I was talking with Bill Willingham, a creator of Fables, about it. Like, we did it. We did a post mortem after the film, and you know, he was saying, you know, they get there, and you know, Precinct 47 is a red herring. Like, it's actually like they get there and not every Death Star is not filled with benzene soaked rags and all you have to do is shoot it enough and it'll combust.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Finn, the janitor, is the key to doing it. And because Bill pointed out, he says every movie where there's like a heist or an infiltration or somebody has to break into a complex or a skyscraper, who does the infiltration team disguise themselves as?
Sanitation.
Waiters and sanitation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it would have been great if, because I love the idea. Am I too long? Am I running too long?
No.
I just, apparently there's somebody walking through my yard just trying to catch a cat.
Well, your neighbors have cats.
I don't know.
I've been walking through people's yards trying to catch Pikachus.
Moving on from episode 7.
He was in the middle of talking.
Oh, you were in the middle? I'm so sorry.
No, it's, I'm just saying that, like, the idea of a stormtrooper who has a moral code and quits is way more interesting to me than blowing up another planet. And
agreed.
And kind of like you said, like, instead of having the air quote Jedi, you know, take care of it all, or having whoever, like having the Imperial defector be the one that saves the day would be really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, I read interviews and, you know, to be fair, I don't think you've constructed a really good film if you have to spend the 3-4 weeks after it comes out on social media and in interviews explaining what you did. And, you know, sitting and going J.J. Abrams explaining the resistance to me, or explaining the hug between, you know, Rey and Leia, who had never met, while Chewie just walks by, you know, Han Solo's freshly dead, and, you know, Chewie just breezes right past Leia. That hug should have been theirs. You see him explaining, like, this is the stuff that should have been in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, they kept saying that the reason why Luke was only in the last 3 minutes of the movie is because every time they tried to insert him earlier in the story, he overshadowed everything else. And I'm going, let him. That, he's obviously your story, not the IMAX Death Star. Mark Hamill just said recently in the film, when after the lightsaber duel, when Kylo Ren tries to draw the lightsaber into his hand and it goes past him, and Rey catches it, Mark Hamill said, "I always thought that was going to be Luke." Like, that's going to be Luke's appearance. Like, Luke has finally showed up to clean up the mess of his, you know, former apprentice. And that would have been Luke's first appearance, is the lightsaber flying past Kylo Ren into Luke's hand. And Luke has shown up to sort of deal with things. It would have been pants meet shit for the entire planet. And, but anyways, I'm rambling. Next question. What did you want to...
What have you seen of Rogue One? And does that kind of give you some warm tinglies to see classic stormtroopers on screen again?
It does. When I first heard about it, because, you know, we first heard about it before Force Awakens came out.
Yeah. Yep. Last time you were on, you were like, it's another Death Star.
Well, that's just it. It's like, this would be amazing if there wasn't already a Death Star 3.0 in Force Awakens. I'm very excited by what I see. Like any other nerd, there's things that I go, oh my God, that's amazing. And there's other things where I go, what? But, you know, I will be there opening day. I mean, you know, we're going to have a Star Wars every year for the rest of our natural lives.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, say that after 20 films. Like, I was...
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody and they were like, I didn't have a problem with there being another Death Star. And I said, okay, that's fine. Would you be okay if there was a Death Star in every single Star Wars film from now on? And they were like, no, of course not. And I said, okay, what's your personal Death Star limit? And they were like, I don't know. I said, no, you've said you're okay with 3 Death Stars. You're going to be cool with a 4th one in this next movie. If they're still doing Death Stars after 7 films, when are you going to sit there and say enough's enough? And they said 5. And I said, okay, so your personal limit is 5 Death Stars in a row. Don't give me a hard time because my limit is 3 Death Stars in a row, you know?
Well, technically, there's 4 that are seen on screen because you get New Hope, then you have Return, then Starkiller Base, and then you get to see the bare bones of the Death Star.
Yeah, but that's like a cameo. That's true.
It's not in the forefront.
None of the like, that's like saying that the hologram of the Death Star in Attack of the Clones is an appearance. You know, I mean the Death Star as a plot device, as a you know, this needs to, it's a character in the film. You know, I mean, I'm hoping as a fan, as a lifelong Star Wars fan, but also as a creative individual, that at some point they don't just I'm looking forward to the time when they break out in some new direction, because Empire Strikes Back is one of the only Star Wars film that doesn't mention or show a Death Star, you know, and Empire Strikes Back is everybody's, you know, almost everybody says it's their favorite Star Wars film.
That's true.
And one of the things that's great about Empire is that it's completely different than Star Wars. Yep. You know, there's no giant space battle at the end. There's no, you know, the plot of Empire Strikes Back is run away from the Empire. Yep. And that's it. There's no higher agenda than we're losing. We're getting our asses kicked every act. And it's just about getting to a safe place. And I look forward to that down the road when they start doing the braver stuff. And by braver stuff, I just don't mean like, you know, here's a redesign of TIE fighters. Here's a beach trooper. Part of me, when I was looking at those costumes from Force Awakens, or not from Rogue One at Star Wars Celebrations, I was like going, how many different versions of stormtroopers does the Empire need?
Really?
You know, honestly. But it's all about toys. It's all about, you know, you put a pauldron on their shoulder, you put a backpack on, all of a sudden a stormtrooper is a sandtrooper. I ramble. I'm so sorry. Betty and Veronica have nice bodies.
No, we're good. No, this is what we love. I mean, by all accounts, from what I've seen and from what I've heard from, you know, various sources via the interwebs, is that Rian Johnson's entry, episode 8, is going to be very weird.
Yeah.
Like, that's what everybody keeps saying.
It seems to me that,
like, it's incredibly different.
With his prior work, it seems to me like they're kind of going to try to do another Empire, and I wonder if they're not just cloning the original trilogy again.
I think that them cloning the trilogy was pretty much The Force Awakens. It hits almost every beat.
Well,
kind of. Look, go ahead, Adam.
But, like, it's interesting because I remember, you know, there was a my dog just came by and has done a drive by, he's very quiet. The original Star Wars trilogy and the original Indiana Jones trilogy, first film of each is groundbreaking, new. It's like the old serials, but it's done in a modern way. You love it. The second film, dark, completely different than the first one. Third one is basically the first film done over again, this time with 33% more daddy issues. And I'm like, yeah, you're kind of right. You know,
you
it's like,
still it down. You're absolutely, you got the nail on the head.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about entertainment value. I'm not talking about this or that. I'm just talking about, you know, when you know, we talked earlier about to follow up something amazing. And the unspoken promise of Empire Strikes Back, when all you had in the Star Wars universe was Star Wars and Empire, the unspoken promise of Empire Strikes Back was everyone's going to be different and they're all growing up. Like, Empire is more mature than Star Wars, and I was really expecting Return of the Jedi to be even more mature than Empire Strikes Back. And it was more of a all ages, you know, sort of like even more all ages than Star Wars. So it would be interesting to see if episode 7, 8, 9, like you mentioned, follow the original, where you've got the first film and then the second film is a radical departure, and then the third film is kind of a return to what's safe.
It kind of seems like they just took the, and they probably didn't realize they were doing it at the time, but it seems like they took the 3-act story format and just stretched each act out into its own movie. Because, you know, the first movie, the good guys win. You meet everybody, the good guys win. Second movie, oh, the bad guys win. The third movie, oh, now the good guys are compromising their morals to come back and save everything.
Yeah. You know? Yep.
I think one of the reasons that J.J. Abrams probably ended up doing what he did with the fucking film was he's too close to it. Like, the fact that he...
Who's not?
But that's the thing, though, is, like, you can absolutely have found somebody that wouldn't have done that, because I agree that, like, in my opinion, I think that it would have been better if they had just focused on the new characters a little bit, like, more in depth about who they were, rather than just being like, get them to a place where they can blow up this giant circle.
Your girlfriend could have done it. Yeah. She hadn't seen any of the films.
Absolutely.
But then at the same time, how can you... Because you need somebody who's hands-off with the original, but then you also need somebody who, like, canonically can write another movie.
Well, that's why you have... That's why multiple people make films.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, the writer's job to do one thing, it's the director's job to do another thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can have your Star Wars fanboy be the producer or the writer, and then you bring in a wild card for the director, and that person can say, okay, well, I'm going to bring a different perspective to this.
And I think that's Gareth Edwards in Rogue One, because of all the footage I've seen from Rogue One, it looks like a Star Wars movie in some of the shots.
But not most of
them. But most of them are... just so different. It just looks weird. Like, it's weird in an exciting way.
It's more because
of the way
artistic.
He shoots movies.
It's definitely more artistic. Like, I get choked up and I get kind of that loss of breath thing at one part of that trailer, because I watch that trailer pretty frequently, and when the lights are lighting up down the tunnel and the main female character is standing there and you hear Forrest Whitaker say in that really haunting voice, "What will you become?" I get stopped every time right there, because that is such an amazing shot, and it's done in a very non-Star Wars-y way, and I'm excited to see it, because like, I know it's about the Death Star, but like, I feel like it's not just going to be like, let's hang out on the Death Star all fucking day. And that I'm excited about. So, I don't know. I have a little bit of a different view on it than most people probably.
I just hope that they do, with them all the Marvel movies, Disney's done a very good job of making them, we talk about this a lot, making it two separate movies. Like, it's the film that it is, but it's also a genre film and something else. And I really hope that they just make this like a good spy movie or a good war movie.
Well, yeah, like Captain
America. Rogue One, I think, is going to be a good heistish movie.
Like, I want to see an espionage movie.
Yeah.
I remember I've tried to do some Star Wars stuff. I remember I pitched a Luke Skywalker Jedi Knight story to Dark Horse back around 1998. And it got shot down because there was a new moratorium that had been handed down from Lucasfilm, you know, saying we're only going to focus on Phantom Menace characters. We're not, you know, they put a moratorium on Luke, Han, and Leia in the toys and all that kind of stuff. And but I'd come up with this story of Jedi Luke, and it was ostensibly like a prison break. You know, and It was like an old World War II Prison Break movie. Mm-hmm. And I realized when I was putting it together that Star Wars stories, because you can sit there and go, well, what's the difference between a Star Wars story and a Star Trek story? Like, if you gave Mr. Spock a lightsaber, does that suddenly make Star Trek Star Wars?
Yeah.
And it doesn't, because they should never have time travel in a Star Wars story.
No.
I think people running around in spacesuits in outer space would seem very weird for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I realized that the thing about Star Wars is you can take Star Wars and take the plot, and you can do it in a World War II setting. Mm-hmm. You know, guns. It becomes the Guns of Navarone. You know, you can take the plot of Star Wars and do it in an old Western setting. You can take the plot of Star Wars and do it in feudal Japan. Okay, mm-hmm. And all you do is you just take all the characters and all the elements and you put them someplace else. And there's no elements that are so fantastical or science fiction-y that they don't translate into World War II, the Old West, feudal Japan. Mm-hmm. And that's always been my personal sort of yardstick for a good Star Wars story, is I'm going, could I do this with, you know, like a bunch of soldiers and a smuggler, in a World War II movie? That kind of stuff. That's just me. That's just this weird sort of personal litmus test.
It's more space fantasy. I mean, it's not sci-fi. I've never found it to be sci-fi. I've always found it to be space
right.
fantasy. Because the Force is fucking magic.
Yeah, but
you know.
But the thing is, that's a difference that most people don't make.
Yeah,
For most people, there's no difference between Star Wars, Star Trek, and Voltron. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just like, it's, yeah, exactly. To them, it's all, you know, if it isn't Kramer versus Kramer, then it's science fiction.
That's the bar. We found the bar.
I'm sorry to be binary, but that's the
12,
bar.
12 Angry Men's kind of a gray area, though.
No, that's science fiction, and I'll tell you. I made that up. I have no
when
nothing to back.
When people confuse Star Wars and Star Trek, I just want to shake them.
This brings up an interesting point. Where does Dinner with Andre fall? My friend Andre.
Dinner with Andre.
Dinner with Andre.
I think that's speculative fiction.
Yeah, fucking. Nah, right. It's sci-fi. It's sci-fi.
But you know, it's. But it's cool. It's like we got a lot of Star Wars coming and. You know, if it's to my personal liking, I'll embrace it. And I'm mature enough to go, you know what? It's not for me anymore. It's moved on to a different. It's now in the hands of a different audience.
Yeah.
And they're not making it for me. It's like after the last Star Trek film, I retired my Star Trek fandom. I just put it away. And it was the last time I had an anger headache too. Ironically, I don't know.
That's how I feel about Ninja Turtles now too. After the last movie,
talk about it.
After the first movie, I was like, you know, it's not for me anymore. But then they kind of, I feel like they're trying to reel me back in with Bebop, Rocksteady, and Krang.
I wouldn't watch the first one, and I literally had a friend of mine tell me that he thought the Ninja Turtles one that came out a couple years ago was one of the better movies he's seen in the last few years.
Who told you that,
Devin?
Oh.
Yeah, no, I was, oh my god, like I
fucking Devin.
Well, like, and here's the thing, is that Devin is in way better shape than I am, and like works out all the time, and I legitimately considered just being like, man, if I hit him one good time, maybe he won't get back up and beat the shit out of me, like, because I got that angry at him. I was just like, no, like, you're just wrong.
Guys, because I really like the new Ninja Turtles.
I will push you out of that bay window, man. I swear to fucking God.
You're fired.
Jesus.
Okay, I still haven't seen anything for
the
Indie
second
Comic-Con.
The second one?
Yes.
Or the first one?
I haven't seen the second
they're
one.
They're both fun.
I'm still supposed
canon,
to go.
But they're fun.
I'm supposed to go see Ghostbusters soon, and I'm like, I'm holding on for dear life for that one.
I don't know how to. Dude, I'm gonna get a rage headache if we don't give this up soon.
So picks and plugs?
Yeah, picks and plugs. At the end of the episode, you know what? I already fucking explained
this.
Yep. No, fuck it.
You explain it every week. Everybody knows.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. There's always a new listener. All right. I have one, so I guess I'll go first. My pick this week is a board game, actually. It's a game that my roommate has that I've really fallen in love with. It's called Mysterium. Just a really quick kind of rundown of it. Imagine if Clue was based in, like, very odd-based visual clues from a ghost.
For our board game savvy listeners, it's Clue meets Dixit.
Yeah.
But the end result is way better than either one of those.
Yes. So basically, it's just, the player characters are, you have a bunch of people sitting at the table who are psychics. Somebody got murdered. You have a murderer, a room, and a murder weapon. And the last player is the ghost, who is giving people visual clues just from a hand of cards they have of these bullshit abstract pictures to try to get the ghost or try to get the psychics to figure out who killed where and with what. And it's really interesting and really fun. I had a fucking blast with it. But if you don't feel like your brain works on a level where you can give people non-intrinsic clues, don't be the ghost, because you'll get too fucking stressed out. So just be aware of that if you ever play the game. It's called Mysterium. You should pick it up. We actually just got the expansion, too.
I'll tell you what Alex's non-pick of the week is. Brevity.
It's not even that funny. It's not even that funny of a joke. It
is funnier than you will ever know. my pick, back at Heroes Con, we met up with former guest Rafer Roberts, and I picked up Nightmare the Rat.
Because we talked about it.
Oh, my God, it's so good. And
have you ever heard of, do you know who Rafer Roberts is?
No.
Okay, he is currently writing The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong for Valiant. And
excellent.
He's a really fantastic dude. You should check his work out. But Chris is describing one of our favorite things he's ever done.
Yeah, but so it was a webcomic originally that he was working on. It's done in a comic strip format. And the physical copy is done on newsprint, like full-size newsprint.
Yeah, it's huge.
And it's like one-page kind of comic strip-y, like Calvin and Hobbes type format. And just it's so hard to explain. It's not for everybody, but if you like dark, weird stuff that's slightly poetic, like, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, Nightmare the Rat. Hilarious. Nightmare the Rat stalks people and steals their teeth.
Yeah.
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 It's bizarre.
And at the end of it, there's an extended one where it's three panel stories, but they're actually all one big story, and the title of each three panel story is the only narrative there is. Everything else is visual.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's cool. It's awesome. Yeah.
My picks. I have two this week. There is a new show that just came out on Netflix. It came out on the 15th. It's called Stranger Things. If any of you out there are really into the old Amblin films that Steven Spielberg did, a fan of the older Stephen King miniseries that used to come on in network television in the 90s or the 80s, if you're a fan of anything involving extraterrestrials or government conspiracies, Area 51, in anything of those in an 80s aesthetic, it is right up your alley. Like, literally, they made, for Alex and Chris, they made a TV show just for me, Bo, and Brock.
Oh.
Basically.
Cool.
It is outstanding. It's made by this pair of brothers called the Duffer Brothers, and actually, they're from Durham, North Carolina.
Nice.
Cool. It's fantastic. It's got Winona Ryder is probably the biggest name on there, along with Matthew Modine is in it. It is an 8-part series, around an hour an episode. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Another thing, I've been getting really into the visual novel walking simulator type video games. Just played one, finished it today, called Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. It's about a year old. Picked it up on the PSN flash sale. Very good.
Cool.
The idea is you wander into a English countryside village after everybody has disappeared after the apocalypse.
Hmm.
And you walk around trying to put together the pieces of the story as to what happened.
That's cool.
And it's really, really awesome.
Yeah, nice.
Done by the same people who did The Chinese Room. They did Dear Esther. They did the sequel to Amnesia, Machine for Pigs. It's really, really good. And Admiral Thrawn being canonized in season 3 of Rebels. I'm really stoked about that.
Adam, do you have a pick for the listeners at home?
Sure. Does it have to be something brand new or something I've just discovered?
Anything at all, ever.
All right. A British television series called Foyle's War. It's takes place in the English countryside on the south coast of England, where, you know, on a clear day you can see France across the channel. Takes place on the eve of the Nazi invasion of England, and it's all about a policeman who is faced with solving murders and crimes during World War II, and the, you know, strange circumstances that arise. Like, there's one episode where a murder takes place at night on the coast, and the only witness is a Nazi spy who is rowing ashore from a U-boat, and the Nazi spy has been caught, and he's trying to convince this guy to be a witness in this murder case. And there's so many difficulties, you know, like suspects and stories have something to do with the war effort. So they try to persuade this detective, you know, look, if you arrest me, it could cost lives because I'm really important to the war effort. And it's a fascinating view of the British home front during World War II, where, you know, there was a danger of your country. And they're talking about, you know, okay, look, the Nazis might be here next week. We're taking down all the street signs. We're removing all the traffic lights. We're getting ready for the invasion. And it's wow. the main character, Foyle, played by an actor named Michael Kitchen, who is absolutely brilliant. There's a wonderful supporting cast, and you sit and watch it, and it's like a who's who of every big British actor right now. The show ran from 2002 to 2015. It's in the Sherlock format. Each episode is 90 minutes.
Okay.
So there's only 28 episodes. There's the 28 mini movies.
That's a lot. Yeah.
What's really interesting is the show's on ITV. Was on ITV, and it had been canceled at the end of its like fifth season, and ITV got a new head of programming who said, we can't have ITV without Foyle's War, bring it back. And the creator of the show said, well, when we thought it was our last season, we rushed all the way to VE Day. We actually went all the way to World War II, the end of World War II, and they said, doesn't matter, bring it back. And the last three seasons are all Cold War stuff in the late 40s. Cool. Where the detective actually goes to work for MI5. It's absolutely wonderful, and I cannot recommend it too highly.
I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah.
And as for plugs, everybody knows, please check out the new Betty and Veronica. It is coming out Wednesday. We are very excited about it coming out, and of course, Adam is very excited about it coming out. Thank you so much for being on again, Adam. We appreciate it. We love having you.
Yeah, we know you got a lot going on leading up. When do you guys head out to San Diego? I'd assume probably tomorrow?
Tuesday. We end up center. Yes. So,
if anybody's going to be at San Diego Comic-Con, please see if you can find Adam. Go say hi to him. And
I will be at the I don't have a table this year. I will actually be at the Archie booth, and if you check my my website, www.justsaya.com, it's got my full convention schedule, and if you follow me on Twitter, we'll be doing constant Twitter updates as to where I'll be and when.
Awesome.
Great.
So thank you very much for having me, guys. Always love talking to you, and I hate Thrawn.
One more plug, real quick.
The one I've done every week here for a while, but it's getting down to the wire. I'm running a half marathon Labor Day weekend raise money for...
Fuck, that's a long way!
to raise money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Please go donate at my website. It's heroes.stjude.org/Olivia's First Half, all one word. We'll have it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. You know, even $10 helps. I'm more than halfway to my goal of $500, and I really like to hit that before the race. So thank you very much.
And we will be posting a before and after picture of her so you can see how ragged she looks.
Yeah, I'm gonna look dead.
Yeah, but she will have a free complimentary post-run beer.
Because apparently beer is legitimately a really good post-run recovery beverage.
It is.
We're excited about this episode, and I guess that's it. I don't know how to take it out now. I just forgot. I haven't been doing this for 3 fucking years. I don't remember how to finish an episode. Colin, shut me up. Take us out.
And from Name Redacted Podcast, I am Colin Norris.
I'm Chris Nielsen.
I'm Alexander Fulmer.
And as always, go out and touch some butts. Thank you.